You're listening to The News Project for the week of February 3rd, 2020, brought to you by GNAT TV. This week's podcast brings you these stories. A pay raise after 13 years. TCI lands in Manchester. The West End Select Board ponders the pros and cons of broadband. Town Meeting 2020, Manchester. And finally, Shakespeare completed.
I'd like to jump in here. When we had our budget discussion, all-day budget discussion meeting, one of the first items that we discussed was under the select board budget, there was a proposed increase in our salary, and I can remember saying, oh, I don't think so. And then I promptly forgot about it, and somehow we approved a budget that included an increase to the select board. That might have been what the board wanted to do. I just wanted to make sure that people were aware that I don't support that, but I went ahead and voted it to approve the budget that includes that. And so if the board's comfortable with that increase, the discussion would stop here. If you believe like I do that we're way overpaid now, I would propose amending it from the floor, I guess, at town meeting.
That was a little leading, if you believe like I do.
What is the difference? I can't.
We're proposing that the total number go from 6,000 to 7,500, which is an increase from 1,200 per member to 1,500 over the course of a year.
When was the last increase, Mr. Chair? Yes.
It was, I believe, 11.
13 years ago.
Do we have?
Oh, sorry. Yes. It was
about 13 years ago. So that's just under 2% per year.
So the stipend primarily, you certainly wouldn't want to figure it out as an hourly thing, but it does compensate probably for some expenses and things associated with the work we do. My opinion is it's very modest. And that probably it should, 13 years is a long time to go without changing it, considering that the costs of everything have changed pretty dramatically in 13 years. So I would encourage select boards going forward to maybe just put an annual escalator on that cost of living or something like that. Still not very much, and certainly not a wage that anybody would take this job for the hourly compensation.
I don't believe that the legislature, the Congress, the select board should be in charge of their own salaries anyways, but certainly none of us are doing this for the,
well, we're not,
for the money.
We're not really in charge of our own salaries because the voters have to approve it.
Good point. I wanted to bring it back up because I had said at that meeting I didn't want that to happen, and I'm following up on that. If the board, when they approve the budget, we're approving it with that in mind.
I think you should leave it as is.
I just wanted to have this discussion in the open because for transparency reasons.
Yeah, well, I think it should be fine as is.
At $1,200?
At the new rate that you incorporated.
No, with the raise.
I just think, to me, it's peanuts. And we're happy to have you guys do what you do for as little as you do it for.
Well, thank you, Sylvia.
I
don't disagree with that. My intent wasn't to approve the budget with that increase in there, and I'll say it again. I just wanted to bring it back up because I don't know if anyone else had forgotten about it or if we were approving the whole budget as it existed. If the majority of the board wants to leave it in there, I'm fine with that, and I will not propose an amendment. I would let somebody else do that if they so desired.
You want to do the John Hawkins, do you?
Well, John Hawkins, I won't get into the story here, but it's a good story. there's a good story relative to...
It's nice to have him remembered.
I'm wondering if we raise it even higher to engage, you know, more civic activity in our town and give it, put some stakes in there.
Well, I would prefer that we focus on things that are more germane to the town.
This is germane.
Not really.
I find it extremely germane to attract more, you know, select board candidates going down.
I don't think that's going to do it.
Honestly, I don't think we should raise the salary to the money, point where people are running for the job because...
I'm sort of semi-serious. I just thought it'd be fun to propose it for the sake of our viewers at home, Mr. Chairman.
I fully understand your sense of humor.
Okay, good.
Okay, I mean, in full disclosure, I got to looking at it and said, oh, crap. We approved our salary increase. I got in touch with John, and he said, well, if it's important to you, bring it up, you know, we can bring it up at the meeting, and that's what I'm doing. And
we did put in the budget, so I drafted up the budget notes, you know, the dialogue in the town meeting report. And after talking to Ivan, he told me to put in the actual, normally we wouldn't highlight a $1,200 or $1,500 increase in the line item, but there it did say that the budget included an additional $1,500 for select board compensation because... I made the good point that we didn't want people to think it was just snuck in there, that we didn't note it. I would never highlight a $1,500 increase.
We approved the budget.
Two pages that we dedicate to the budget.
I wanted to make sure we discussed it on TV so that people understand. We highlighted it in our budget narrative, and I don't think we can shed any more light on it than that. So at least people are aware of which we were talking. So I don't want to spend any more time on that. I don't see a groundswell of support for my position, so
we'll leave it as it is.
It was a great campaign statement, though.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a second. I got to start thinking about my re-election now.
You're all done.
I just wanted to
your opponent just got a huge boost.
All they need is a black and white picture of you looking creepy and then a big stamp that goes across says, voted for own pay raise.
A group of state officials involved in pushing forward the Transportation and Climate Initiative, or TCI as it's often referred to, met with about 50 local residents at the Manchester Community Library on Thursday, January 30th, to discuss the proposal and hear feedback from the public about it. The initiative is a regional collaboration of 12 Northeast and Mid-Atlantic states in the District of Columbia that seeks to improve transportation, develop the clean energy economy, and reduce carbon emissions from the transportation sector. The participating states are Connecticut, Delaware, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Virginia. It began in 2010, and it's similar to the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which seeks to limit carbon emissions from the electric power generation sector. This one focuses on transportation and contemplates an additional charge in the price of gasoline and other fuels used in transportation, which for some is a bit of a sticking point. It's a market-based mechanism which presupposes, in classic capitalist economic theory, that people will use less of a product if the price is more expensive. Those opposed to it tend to refer to it as a carbon tax, one that Vermonters, particularly those living in rural areas where transportation alternatives are limited, will struggle to afford, even if that revenue is funneled back to them through rebates or other means. Riley Allen of the state's Department of Public Service led a team of state officials who explained what the initiative was trying to do and how it might be structured. At present, the idea is to impose an additional fee on gas purchased by fuel distributors, who presumably would pass that cost along to their customers. When it came the turn of the audience to weigh in and offer feedback, there was no shortage of questions and comments. They kept on coming, one after the other.
From the Burlington, Mount Pelier area, you're living in a closer proximity to everybody. Southern Vermont, you've got more driving, and the people that are down here that are lucky enough to have really good jobs might have to drive a distance. A lot of people here, their jobs are lawn work. Mm-hmm. So you're telling me it's not only going to impact them on their car, their vehicle, their truck, now it's going to impact them on any of their lawn mowers, leaf blowers, or whatever else they're using.
Yeah, those are correct statements.
I realize
that. Yeah, Yes, ma'am.
I see this as an increase in everything, because the gas is going to be brought in, it's going to be taxed, and it's going to be passed on to us in more ways, more than just at the pump. It's going to raise the cost of food, everything.
So we're looking at this, obviously, from the perspective of the state of Vermont and how it fits into the regional compact. But the larger viewpoint we have to look at, I think, and be considerate of, is how this is going to impact climate change. I mean, climate change is essentially the existential threat that we have to the existence of the planet. And I think we have a moral obligation to do whatever we can when it comes to leaving a planet that hopefully is not a mess to our grandchildren and to their grandchildren.
When it comes to meeting emission targets, electric vehicles are often seen as the best possible pathway forward to meeting those goals. But there's a lot more to it than simply selling or incentivizing people to buy more cars. The underlying infrastructure is also a question.
I think the only way, realistically, Vermont's going to be able to hit these goals, which are very ambitious, is we have to get a lot more electric vehicles on the road. I own an electric vehicle. It's not a sexy Tesla. It's a mundane old Nissan Leaf, but it's zero emissions, okay? I drove it to my friend's house in New Hampshire a couple days ago. I drove it back today. I stopped at a Vermont rest area just south of White River Junction, went inside, talked to the tenant there, and I said, do you have an EV charger here? No, we don't have it. Any plans to get one? No. They're pretty expensive. Now, it wasn't her fault. She's not making that decision, but the point is, I was able to get home, barely, but people are not going to make that transition unless there's an infrastructure, all right? The egg has got to come before the chicken, or however you want to phrase it, whatever metaphor you want to use, right? The infrastructure's got to be there. So
afterwards, we spoke with Jim Sullivan, the director of the Bennington County Regional Commission, which helped organize the event.
First of all, it was great to see so many people come out because it's a really important topic and an interesting opportunity. So, you know, debates like this are what's going to, you know, decide what we do. I think it was really interesting to hear the presentation and the discussion about, you know, a program like this that really is, as Riley Allen pointed out, a market-driven approach. So it really is trying to find the most efficient, economically efficient way to achieve a state objective. And I think that's a really positive thing about the program. And I think the other thing that that maybe people didn't talk about directly, but I think it's an important point that has been made, is that there's some impacts associated with this. There's some negative impacts associated with anything you do. But the negative impacts associated with not doing anything on those same folks are probably even more severe, you know? I mean, what are we going to tell the people, you know, 10, 15 years from now when gasoline prices are 4, 5, 6, we don't know what they're going to be, but they're probably going to be higher. And we say, oh, yeah, we had an opportunity to do something, but we didn't do it. And so, you know, now what are your options? Now what are your alternatives? So whether it's TCI or something else, I think it's really important we recognize we need to do something to help those folks out in the future.
The 12 participating states in the District of Columbia are working on a Memorandum of Understanding, or MOU, which is expected to be finalized by next spring. Areas that are not yet locked down include what fuel should be covered, who has to buy carbon allowances, how the carbon cap might change over time, and who gets what slice of the revenue. Backers of the plan hope to have it ready to be rolled out in about 2 years. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
So I'll move that, and with the addition that I have, if it's okay with you guys, I've talked to Rusty Davis, and he is willing to be our point man on this.
That's great.
So I will add that into it. And the motion, Annie, is that the town of Weston intends to participate in the Windham Regional Broadband Project.
Second. Discussion.
Has anybody raised a question down at Wyndham Regional about the possible negative effects of this?
Isn't this just to go the next step to do a survey?
No, they haven't, because I think the reason for that is that there will be a survey, and people will have the opportunity in the survey to... There aren't going to be any negative effects of the survey unless somebody gets really upset about surveys.
Well, it's not so much a survey as, say, the project went through and it was mentioned that it would possibly draw an influx of people to the area to work out their homes and stuff off the internet. And nobody has said boo about the side effects of all of a sudden you're getting an influx of people because they're leaving the city to come to the country, and we don't have a lot of the stuff that they have in the city. And next thing you know, they're saying, well, we want this, we want that. So you add it, and out goes your taxes. And so I'm just raising the question, has anybody even discussed it? Or is everybody just looking at the positives and not the negatives?
I think by saying we're participating is we're agreeing to go to the next step to actually do a survey, and that it's a multiple step process. At any time we can say this is not going to work for us or it is, but I think it's that was my understanding from the meeting we attended, and from the way you specifically worded the resolution, is that we will participate as far as the survey and the next steps, but it's not a commitment to open-ended accept everything that it goes with it.
The project,
am I correct?
The project is basically offering an opportunity to either join one of these CUDs or not.
Right.
And it's very clear participation can, that one of the outcomes of participation is to decide not to join the Communication Union District. And you know, all we're doing is the project is to bring this in front of the, you know, all the all the townspeople and all the voters, and let them decide what they want to do, and then
continue to explore it.
Well, I'm not sure. I just want to question one thing there, Jim, because I'm not too sure that that's a vote thing.
Correct. I'm not either.
Because it's a commercial side, and I think it's whether it's 501c3 nonprofit or which it would more likely be, I think, but it would still be a commercial project. It wouldn't be. For instance, my guess is that we would have certainly some second homeowners who would be very interested in participating in that survey for exactly the reason that Denny brings up, or on the edges of that reason anyway. If they're, you know, our age and they have kids and grandkids, you know, they might visit them more often or be happier when they're here or whatever. If they can have that available, they might be rather favorably inclined toward that and answer a survey positively. And I think the survey results go into the commercial prospects for it, really.
And I honestly, I'm not exactly sure how those survey results get processed. There are a bunch of other steps to take after the survey, but participation in this thing, participating in the project to figure out whether you want to join a CUD or not, includes both options.
Well, that's,
we absolutely don't have to do it.
Based on the survey, because it's a commercial operation as well, they will determine whether it's worth it or not, or advise how to do it or not to do it.
Well, so, the majority of people say, no, we don't want it because...
Exactly, but that's what they want to know.
It's going to bring too many people and their taxes will go up, then...
So the people who are coming to sell are limited to just the
Or if not enough people say we don't want it, then they're
No, all homeowners.
So it's one or the other.
Even second homeowners.
It's a survey, exactly. I don't think we're not committing to anything. We're locked into Denny.
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to bring it up so it got discussed and us.
Okay. Noted.
So everybody in favor of this resolution?
Aye.
Aye.
Town meeting day is less than a month away, and across the North Shire and the 11 towns that are part of GNAT's coverage area, select board members and other town officials have been working to craft new municipal budgets, and in the case of the Taconic and Green Regional School District, a school budget that voters will be asked to approve. The Taconic and Green Regional School District meeting will be held on February 25th at the Dorset School. Most town meetings will be held on March 2nd and 3rd, but Manchester will have its floor meeting and discussion of the town warning on Saturday, February 29th. To start our series off, Town Manager John O'Keefe of Manchester gives us the overview of their budget and town warning.
A shorter than typical agenda, 16 articles total. The first couple ones that might be of interest to people are 4 and 5, which are the budget. 4 is the operating budget, 5 is the capital budget. On the operating side, healthcare costs, the premiums have gone up about 15% compared to last year. And then we also hired, as part of the natural staff hiring process, we hired a lot of people that were on family plans. So our rates have even gone up even further. But despite that, we've been able to keep the budget just slightly over 3%, we think, with grand list growth. So we're really happy. The select board worked really hard to cut out some items and streamline some things to get to that number. On the capital side, you've got Article 5 that does the capital piece of it. Article 12, which is going to be voted on Tuesday the 3rd, is included in that number, and that's a bond bill, or a bond vote, sorry, for various improvements. It's titled here, new fire truck, half of a new fire truck for the fire department. Improvements to the public safety facility, mostly the exterior of the public safety facility where the police, fire, and rescue operate out of. Certain sidewalks downtown on Main Street and Bonnet Street, and then also some improvements to the rec park. One of the improvements is actually tearing down the maintenance barn, which we think is about 100 years old, and building it further down at the near the Rod and Gun Club on town property, and then expanding out the parking area where the current maintenance shed is. So those are the big items on town meeting. We also have Communications Union District item, the Southern Vermont Communications Union District, which will be voted on Saturday. And that one would authorize the town to join the Southern Vermont Communications District, and they would be working on bringing broadband service to more areas of Bennington County. It is interesting that the state law that enacts this actually says that the taxpayers cannot make contributions to the district, but it still requires a town vote. We have a real estate tax exemption for the Masonic Temple, Spruce Street, and then your usual voted appropriations. All the voted appropriations are level funded, including Article 15, which is the library. And that wraps up town meeting. So town meeting on the 29th of February, 1 o'clock at MEMS, and then the voting will happen on March 3rd between 8 and 7 p.m.
We'll be hearing from other towns in the coming weeks. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
37 plays, 3 men, 2 hours, 1 fantastic show.
To be or not to be, that may be the question. That one group of actors from the Dorset Players will attempt to clarify when a production of the complete works of William Shakespeare, the abridged version, opens on the stage of the Dorset Playhouse on Friday, February 14th. 3 local actors, Mike Cutler, Chris Restino, and Joe Moser, will perform scenes and snippets from all of the Bard's 37 plays mashed together in a 2-hour romp unlike anything you might remember ever seeing from previous Shakespearean plays you may have been to. Todd Helt is the director of the Unorthodox production, and he walks us through what's going on.
And the bulk of the project is Romeo and Juliet and Hamlet, and then we take some serious liberties with getting the other 35 plays taken care of. There is a framework that we're trying to stay true to, but the actors are presented with some challenges as the production moves along, and they do their best, given their interesting quirks, to keep that going, and mostly due to their lack of knowledge, they are not handicapped at all. There is at least a reference to every one of Shakespeare's plays. We won't actually cover each and every one of them. For example, the comedies are all basically the same play, just rewritten over and over again. So we take all 16 comedies and condense them into one 2-page bit.
We also had a chance to talk with the three actors as well. One thing becomes very clear very quickly. Comedy is the order of the day, not tragedy.
I play Romeo. This is my Juliet. Very it's a very fun part of the show.
Oh yeah,
I'm sure it is.
Lots of changes.
So it must be a challenge to trying to do so many different parts in the course of a 2-hour long play or so. I mean, that's a little different from a typical standard type of production.
For sure,
but it's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun. One of the biggest things that I like doing in shows like this, where you're playing multiple roles, is figuring out, okay, where do I put this costume, or where do I put this prop in order to retrieve it quickly? And that's always fun, like setting that up before and then having to go through it, mm-hmm. and be like, oh wait, is this your costume? Wait, that's my costume. And then having to put it all back. It's a lot of fun.
You're very good with voices. Having many characters, he's very good with voices, especially he's lucky he gets to play most of the female characters. So it's great to figure out.
Really,
yes.
Yeah,
exactly. Figure out voices. Figure out walks. We've been practicing backwards and forwards walking for the end of the show.
Oh yeah. Working that out with Todd. Yeah. It's like you have to think about what the mechanics
he's a master.
Are. You know, when you walk, you're leaning forward, mm-hmm. but when you walk backwards, you're still leaning forward. Mm-hmm. So trying to remember things like that.
So it's fun to develop. Yeah. Accents and walks.
What's nice is that. As far as studying it and getting it into my brain, it definitely is sectioned, where it's like, this is the first play, this is the second play, up to a certain point, and then they all start blending towards the end of the second act, and that's when things start getting very chaotic, and it's just repetition. Keep on saying the lines.
Curtain time for the complete works of Shakespeare is at 7:30 p.m. on Friday, February 14th, and Saturday the 15th. And at 2 p.m. on Sunday, February 16th. For tickets and information, visit the Dorset Players website at dorsetplayers.org or call the box office at 802-867-5777.
You're doing Hamlet backwards. It's much funnier than when it's being done forwards. So. Okay.
For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.